everything you said, I've heard all about. So you've made some remarks in the past about when is Papa Fritz gonna be here. Papa Fritz is here.
I'm doing okay. I hope everyone out there is handling their quarantine as well as possible.
Yep, just keep on washing your hands and, you know, and sanitizing, and you'll be good. Kelly, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm good. Last week was Christmas for us, and this year it's New Year's Day. It's 1984, finally.
Oh, wow. Nice. It is. It is. And on this episode, we're looking at January 14th, 1984. And it opens up with the David Von Erich match, Reverse Slayer, we just talked about. So we're not going to, by just talking about it, I mean on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. So we can easily just bypass that and go right. Opens up with a Buddy Roberts interview where they're talking about a title change in Georgia. Is this a fan of one, Kelly?
Oh, shoot. Yeah, that's a good question. I didn't even think to look. I think it is because I don't think the Freebirds were wrestling in Georgia at the time. So, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm like 95% sure it was a Phantom change.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like the Birds went in Georgia. The Iron Claw is banned.
Yeah.
Because they're definitely trying to play up the Texas-Georgia rivalry. What'd you make of the interview there, John?
Well, before I get to the interview about this, of the Phantom switch, for a Phantom switch, they go into a lot of fucking detail because they said that Ric Flair was the partner. Like, they didn't have Hayes, so Flair was their partner, and he dropped the fall, but they didn't. And there's a lot of fuckery going on with the show, boy. I would put a gun to my head last night trying to make sense out of some of the shit.
Yeah, because when they tell you to go undercover, you always want to keep it simple so you're not tripping over lies.
There's all kinds of shit here. But so anyway, Bill Mercer introduces the show and then cuts to himself, which is hilarious. Now we go to me, where's Buddy Roberts? It's him in a different jacket. And it's Buddy with the big trophy. He's the only one who's still allowed in Texas, but they still had the sixth man. They call it belts. They keep calling it belts, but it's a trophy. And yeah, they have a match in Georgia, but the Claw is banned in Georgia. Now they're going to be trying to get a match maybe in Texas, but they don't want to have it in Texas because they're not fair to the Birds of Day. This goes on and on. Buddy's hardly getting a word in edgewise. But the neat thing is that Buddy is totally calm. This is like, he's like, well, no, Bill, it's not fair. You know, we get treated poorly here in Texas. And like, he never raises his voice, which I really love. But Bill Mercer, first he mentions that they have Michael Hayes on the phone and then proceeds to go, we'll get to that later, and then just goes on and on and on. And all I wrote down, I couldn't keep up. I just wrote down gibberish. It's just gibberish until he gets to – and what Michael Hayes, what has happened to the spirit of Christmas? What would the children think? And Buddy's all calm, and he gets even more – Bill gets more upset. He's saying, Hayes ruined Santa. He's turned Santa Claus into a monster. And this is the theme of this show is Bill Mercer is appalled that Michael Hayes and the Freebirds ruined Christmas for children everywhere. The image of Santa is totally besmirched.
Much worse than the Silent Night movie.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And so they finally get Hayes on the phone. And they can't have it in Georgia. We can't have it in Texas. What do we do? And Hayes is like, there's 48 other states we can do this in. It's not hard. And he says something about Bill that I guess makes sense. He's like, you're either hard of hearing or your mother was a parrot. I'm like, okay. Whatever. I don't know. This Buddy Roberts is the only one who came out looking good during this whole thing because he just sat there calmly answering questions. And then until Bill Mercer at the end has to fuck with him, he's like, all right, buddy, we know you just do whatever Michael says. And then they cut to the end, and I'm like, oof, that was rough. It was a Buddy Roberts interview where he barely gets a word in edgewise. It's all Mercer, just blah, 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 blah. Oof, this is a rough one.
Yeah, what about you, Kelly? Any thoughts on the segment?
No, Johnny summed up everything, but I did check wrestling data for Terry Gordy results in Georgia from 83 and 84, and there's no results. So, yeah, I guess we can say it was 100% fictitious title change.
But why involve Flair?
I think part of it because he's also the big heel in the territory, and it was a way of that it wasn't the Birds. I think this is different. I don't think Flair they were blaming him on their title loss, and they blamed it on Flair because I think they're going to be building to maybe a Freebird, maybe a Gordy or Michael Hayes match with Flair.
Yeah, maybe.
Okay. I don't know. I was just baffled.
Reason on why they're wrestling type of thing when he comes into the territory. I mean, even though they're not supposed to be working Texas anymore. I mean, I think it was just they didn't want to say they lost the titles to the Von Erichs, so they used Flair, who technically, if it's not Jimmy Garvin, who's not working in their territory, they can also give one of the Von Erich brothers a win over, in fact, fictitious win over Pinfall and Flair, which pushes their Von Erich brothers title picture or more. So I'm guessing, since they're right now they're working using the David, it probably was David who pinned Flair for the title, the six-man belts, and then they went to Georgia and they won on the non-Iron Claw rule, Phantom One. Yeah, convoluted. Blah, 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 Johnny put it. Then it leads us into a match of a pair of pros in Buddy Roberts and Johnny Mantel. Kelly, can you add it? What's going on here without your super push talking point? Bullshit.
No, it's 1984 now, so no more super push for Johnny Mantel. And we know that it petered out in the last few months of 1983 anyway. Well, I don't have a ton of notes, and I do have several notes on Mercer commentary, but I'm going to leave that to Johnny because I'm almost positive he would have picked up on some of the classic comments by Mercer in this one. And if he doesn't, I'll add them in later. Mercer is just awful here. Anyway, I guess it also doesn't help that the match I thought was on the dull side. You could smell the draw coming. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And this was a typical that we've seen several times over the past few years. A draw, 10-minute draw to start.
And
the
I think
show.
We've seen these guys do a draw before, too.
Yeah, you're probably right. I know Johnny Mantel was in his fair share of them, that's for sure. Yeah, and I also watched this.
Yeah, he's the master of them.
Yeah, I watched this over a month ago, so I don't remember any of it. I'm going totally on my notes here, and my notes say this wasn't much to remember. So, Johnny, Pete, please fill in the blanks.
Well, it was a pair of guys who were a pair of pros knowing, hey, we have 10 minutes to fill on the TV, and that's kind of what we got. I mean, you have... I mean, the chain wrestling is well done. I mean, it's well executed. It's smooth. You see Johnny Mantel works in where his choice of weaponry is working the arm. Buddy uses the front face lock as his control move. And, you know, and they work spots around it. The highlight for me was Mantel's hangman clothesline. It was really nasty. And Robert took a really nice bump off it. But you're right. The match screamed a draw. Both guys using control segments that, you know, were usually, you know, you expect to see in a Bob Backlund long title match, and here they're only getting 10 minutes, so you got a lot of, you know, a lot of downtime. But I thought they kept the match moving, and it was fine. It wasn't offensive or anything. Was it an all-time classic? No. It's 10 minutes of a pair of pros going out there and eating a chunk of time for television. And World Class is famous for the opening. I mean, I don't know how many opening matches we've gotten that's been a draw. I bet you one out of every three or four shows, it seems like. So it's definitely a trope of the company. John, what about you? What's going on here?
Well, as far as the match goes, yeah, the clothesline was cool. Excuse me. But I did not like this match at all. I was bored. But I was also just furiously writing down Bill Mercer lines. And because it was a draw, I kept going, when is this going to end? When is this? I kept looking up and they're still wrestling. It felt like, and I'm like, let's just get started. Buddy takes off his wig and his hair's growing back. And I guess it's kind of spiky because Mercer says, it's Buddy Roberts with could be called a punk rocker haircut if he had an electrical guitar.
Electrical.
He could really get with it. Electrical. If he had an electrical guitar, he could really get with it. Get like the kids do. Get with. Oh my God. 5 stars for that electrical guitar. Then talking about John Mantell. He's going back about Monte County again. He's like, Monte is the western type of county, wide open country, where the deer and the antelope and Johnny Mantell roam and play. Like, I was just picturing John Mantell running around in a field with deers and antelopes, like Tarzan of Monte County. Buddy started growing his hair back as soon as the birds gave notice. He's like, okay, that's it. I'm growing it back now. But then we got more Mercer. He goes, I've been handed a note. Okay, keep that in mind. He was just handed a note, and I'm waiting for what does the fucking note say. And we don't find out for quite some time because he starts filibustering. And he goes, I have a note about the upcoming match between the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. And boy, that brings up Santa Claus Michael Hayes. And once again, I felt that it was one of the most despicable displays of uncouthness. Ugh, a Santa Claus suit and trying to give out presents, putting questions in the minds of the youngsters, and to take a symbol like Santa, and destroy it, and desecrate it. As I said, I've received a note. It was like 15 minutes, or felt like 15 minutes. And he goes, and it says that match is progressing. It has been signed with no information. It's the classic Bill Mercer. I've heard a rumor.
Yeah.
At this point in my notes, I just wrote down, holy shit, I can't anymore. I can't.
Yeah, it's almost like he can't get away from being a play-by-play guy versus what his real story, what his real was an investigative reporter. Oof. And he can't let it go. He wants to be like the smartest guy in the room.
But then he says this. Now, Hayes and Gordy are gone because they lost matches. Okay. Then he says that they managed to get this match to happen in Texas. He goes, because the birds have agreed to rescind the rules that keep Hayes and Gordy out. What? That makes it sound like they wanted to leave. So in that case, the claw will be legal. And I'm scribbling hate cartoons in my notes. Just little Bill Mercers with X's on their eyes. And just he's going on and on more about how they destroyed Christmas, destroyed Santa Claus. And I'm like, did they get letters? I mean, did they get letters from angry parents? And this is Mercer just having a clean house by constantly going on and apologizing about how Christmas was ruined? Because I'm telling you, if you're a kid and you watch that show and you saw that skinny Santa Claus and thought it was real, you're an idiot. Your child's an idiot. And this match sucked. And then I looked up and I knew it was going to be another draw. And boy. Not how I wanted to start my Friday night.
question, Johnny. Of the M&M boys, of Manning and Mercer, who do you hate most?
I hate Manning. Bill Mercer strikes me as being probably a perfectly nice person, but he's terrible at his job. Whereas Manning is a scumbag and he also wants to be the center of attention in the ring. And as we've seen from I don't think Bill Mercer ever got involved in any money laundering or gambling shit. You know, So I think we can. It's just Mercer drives me.
Yeah,
Mercer. It's just he drives me crazy. The stuff where he's interviewing the Freebirds at their house or the on-the-spot stuff. He's great at that stuff. Yeah. I think he's wonderful at that stuff.
Great at that Mean Gene role. But he's just really not – the play-by-play is just not his thing. And, I totally agree with you. Totally agree. Yeah, but he doesn't nail chalkboard me like he does you guys. But, yeah, but he he's – I'm not defending him. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, and I'm – because otherwise I would have had to try to talk about a 10-minute Johnny Mantell draw that I would have nothing to say.
And for me, bad announcing, because it's so such a normal trope, doesn't bother me as much. And then it's almost like you can zone it out, where when you get good announcing, it almost like you're – I can hear it. But when I get bad announcing, I'm kind of goes in and out, one ear out the other. Next up, we get Chris Adams.
I was going to say bad announcing just ruins it for me. Totally ruins it for me.
It doesn't for me because bad announcing is so – we get more bad announcing than we get good announcing. And so, there's so many bad announcers in territorial wrestling up to what's going on now that it's just like bad announcing I'm able to just ignore because it's so prevalent. And if you don't, you're almost going to not enjoy anything.
Well, yeah, it's one of the main reasons why I haven't been able to enjoy WWE for quite some time. But it just struck me that Mercer, he started in the 50s as an announcer, and it just struck me that he's very much in that style of the 50s wrestling announcers that would often just announce it like they're above it all and not taking it very seriously and joking a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's how he learned to announce in that style in that era, and he's never really changed over the decades.
Well, the difference between him and the guy like Russ Davis, in Chicago Russ Davis was good and entertaining. Mercer is terrible. He can't create a tangential line of logic. It's just.
But Kelly, you also think Ed Whalen's a good announcer, correct?
Good, yes. I'll never say great, but I think he was good, and he definitely wasn't as bad as a lot of people say. Whalen had his moments where he was kind of silly and corny, but he could also be quite serious, much more serious than Bill Mercer ever could be, and sell angles way better than Mercer could. And I'm not. I'd like to think about
being biased. But also sandbag angles way harder than a lot of. But he also, on the flip side, was the king of sandbagging angles that he didn't want.
That's his rep. But I always defended that as Ed being like a real person that hated liars, and the heels were coming in, cutting interviews where they were lying, they were cheating, and Ed was just treating them like they were scum. So he would pull the mic away. He wasn't going to give them any time to spew their lies on TV. So that's how I've always justified the supposed sandbagging of heels by Ed Whalen. But this is a world-class podcast, not a Stampede podcast, so let's get back on track.
Yeah, sometimes we might have to do a little Stampede just to hear and see if Johnny goes off on a tangent. Next up, we get Chris Adams versus Black Gordman. This is an interesting piece of business. What's going on here, Kelly?
Well, it's an angle to advance the Jimmy Garvin Chris Adams feud. It's not a match. I mean, it is, but it's barely a match. Garvin comes into the ring, cuts a promo on Adams, because the American title has been held up yet again. I think it's been held up.
Yeah, that's a nugget we just learned here. It wasn't.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Stemming from, I guess, the Star Wars match that had a controversial finish. And then after cutting the promo, Garvin attacks Adams, lays him out with a suplex before the match with Gordman starts. And then the bell rings and Adams quickly rolls up Gordman for the pin after, I don't know, 5 seconds or whatever, 10 seconds. So that was fine. A big pop. And then Garvin and Gordman double team Adams after the bell. So this just adds more fuel to the fire, keeps the feud going. This has been maybe the best feud for several months now in the territory.
Yeah, well, would you call it a nice piece of business?
Or... Yeah, definitely a nice piece of business.
Yeah, just a nice little angle to keep the feud alive and add a little juice to it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Where about you, Johnny? What's going on? What you're thinking here?
Well, it was funny because when they went to commercial, it was the Chiron for what the next match is. Says, next up, Adams versus the Outlaw. And I was thinking, like, who the fuck's the Outlaw? And then it was Black Gordon.
Yeah, that's Outlaw? Right. That was weird.
Okay. They couldn't think of anything to come up with for Black Gordon. They could have just said Black Gordon or Gordman, the Outlaw. So I thought the suplex was supposed to be Garvin, because Garvin would use a brainbuster at times, but it never really looked like a brainbuster. It just looked like a suplex. So that's what I thought he was doing. And I love that Gordman gets in on it at the end, because, you know, he's just like, I'm going to get my heat back. Attach myself to this. And again, Mercer calls that all of Jimmy Garvin's actions uncouth. Uncouth. Like, that must have been the word of the day on his little calendar on his desk. He's going to use it as often as possible. But yeah, this was fun as an angle. But boy, they started chanting, we want sunshine. We want sunshine. And I said the last show about who the star is, who's generating the heat. And we're going to see it a lot in these next two shows, because it is all about sunshine.
Yeah, she's the catalyst. I ain't going to lie. She's definitely the catalyst here. And it's all a team thing, you know? It's kind of like, I don't even know how to really, when you want to say it, it's like you have the superstar wide receiver, and that's how I feel sunshine. And without Adams and Garvin throwing her the ball in a way, she's not going to be able to get over, she won't have the platform, if you will. And so it's so crude. This is about working and being a team in an angle to get people over. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But I honestly also think with how over Sunshine is right now, if this had been Al Madrill, it would be just as hot.
I totally agree. I don't know if it would work quite as well with Madrill, but any good-looking baby face, it would have worked.
Yeah, I mean, because it is like, who is Sunshine's tool to get at Garvin? Because the feud is Garvin versus Sunshine.
It would have worked with Ice because he's black, and I don't know if during that time frame. During that time frame era. You need a fresh face, baby face. Like, you know, Ricky Morton would have worked in this role. Chris Adams. It has to be a good-looking guy.
It wouldn't have been. You know what? It wouldn't have been Al either, because he's Hispanic, and that wouldn't have gone.
Yeah.
The number one rule is it would have to be a white guy. So I guess he's better than Mike Bond.
Exactly. And then we get into the main event of Kerry Von Erich versus the Missing Link, and the Link is back without the face paint. I guess he can't make up his mind. Or this is recorded before reunion. What do you think of this, Kelly?
I thought this was really, really good. It's not much of a match like the main events have been lately. They've been mostly schmozzes with brawls at the end. But this really worked well to get Link over as a heel and to set up this feud between Link and Devastation Incorporated. Because now, I don't think it's been had been established before that Link was managed by Akbar. Because I have the note this was the first time Akbar was against Link. Yeah. So now it's Link and Akbar, Devastation Incorporated versus the Von Erichs, basically, from this match. And I thought this was a really strong start.
And with this angle, they're moving into the main feud. They're taking over the Freebirds.
Exactly. Yeah. So this was great stuff. Link attacks Kerry with a headbutt off the top rope before the bell. And Kevin hits the ring to even things up here. Kerry's busted open and pissed off before the bell even rings. And then he attacks Link. The crowd is going nuts. And this is where I made the note. This is a great way to get Link over as a major threat. And we had a great back and forth brawl, brief, but still it was heated coming off of Kerry being busted open so early. Kerry kept fighting back. The crowd just kept getting hotter and hotter. And then we have the schmoz. Akbar and Kevin enter the ring. And Manning actually gets tossed aside for a double disqualification. And yeah, this was really, really great as far as using TV to set up a big program. And yeah, so I'm invested. I want to see how this goes down in the next few months. Good stuff. Really good stuff.
Yeah, totally what you'd call shifting the deck or clearing the deck in a way.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're making Devastation Inc., elevating them. I'm with you. Everything you said was right on. It was really well done. The Pearl Harbor, the busting up of Kerry. It was all back and forth. There wasn't a big heat segment or anything. It was just two big boys hitting each other. I like Link, Of course, his weapon and pretty much all he's doing is using headbutts, but he's aiming, working the cut. He throw a punch, work the cut. But it was really good. It was a big schmoz that gets Link over by going toe to toe with Kerry. And at that point, missing Link is kind of, I don't want to say made, but man, he's made for the territory. And
yeah,
maybe that's why he spent so damn long in world class, because the world class people treated him as a big star, and he might have been, his main event light might not have been long there, but my God, he definitely ended up making a big living there in world class. John, what about you, man? Where are you falling on this?
I loved the match. Get that out of the way first. I loved the mayhem. I loved the match. Kerry being busted open, Link attacking before the bell, just everything going crazy, the schmoz at the end. I loved the whole thing. But, wow. Speaking of Bill Mercer not being able to convey the emotion of a match, this match was mayhem and there was blood, and he completely was nonplussed by this at all. This wasn't Lance Russell like, oh, come on, like, or Jim Ross or Vince McMahon or anybody at the time. This was Bill Mercer. He's nonplussed by all of this. It's so annoying. He again calls Link an apparition of humanity, like twice. So that's his thing. He's an apparition. No green. I like to think Akbar saw him. He's like, what's with the green? You got to get rid of the green. Fritz is telling him to wear the green. Akbar is saying don't wear the green. He's being pulled in two different directions. But so Akbar, when Akbar's in there, he's doing like a counting thing. I don't know what he's doing, but it looks like he's counting, but he's just instructing the Link on what to do. And Mercer goes, it looks like General Akbar is counting in there. That speaks to some of his mental capacity, I would imagine. I'm like, what are you doing? There's a murder going on in the ring. No selling of the man. He says, number one, I think he's drunk this show. I think he's wasted. And when we get to the last shot, he looks shit-faced. If you get a still shot of Bill Mercer at the end when he says goodnight, everybody, he looks shit-faced. Because he says about the Link, it's human frailty playing tic-tac-toe with himself. What?
I'm so glad I'm able to zone him out.
Yeah.
And he was But what he was talking about was the Link hitting his own head into the turnbuckles to show how hard his head is. That's how he described it. Tic-tac-toe with himself. And, oh, Kevin, did you catch out Kevin's sweet All Japan jacket?
Yeah, tight.
Yeah, it was tight, man. It's All Japan pro wrestling jacket. And Kelly, I'm shocked that you didn't pick up on this one, because Bill Mercer, once again, the Link, he explodes all over Kerry Von Erich.
Yeah, he says that in almost every match now, so I've stopped counting.
Yeah, but he doesn't follow up with this. He was backing up something like a rectal, I swear. I swear to Christ, that's what he said. I had my earbuds in, I rewound it. He said he's backing up something like a rectal, and I lost it right then and there. I drew a little cartoon. No, then he said, he's almost into a test tube just hanging in there. Heck, he might have been born in a test tube. And I drew a little cartoon of myself watching this on my phone with my earbuds in with a gun to my head. A test tube? He's completely lost it. And again, at the end, when they show it, they announce next week it's Andre and the Iceman versus the Super D's, and he's standing at ringside, and I'm not kidding, he looks plastered. Just a kind of a pie-eating grin, with his eyes kind of droopy. Like, hey, got through another one. But the match itself, I loved the match.
Yeah, you're right, though. Like, Jim Ross would have got it over. Lance would have got it over. David Crockett would have gotten it over.
Yeah. Or Vince. Vince would have been.
Yeah, Vince was great with
Vince. Oh, my God.
Yeah, Vince would have been. Yeah. I mean, but you know, it's actually a Texas thing. I don't think anybody in Southwest Championship Wrestling could have gotten it off well. It's just, yeah, the good announcers definitely would have got it. Got it. Got in the angle. Got in the match way more over. And it makes you wonder how. I mean, they did well anyway with the Freebird feud. You'd wonder if they actually had a good announcer putting things over to the extent they really should have been put over, how well they would have worked.
Well, when they switched to Lorenz, I mean, Lorenz isn't exactly a ball of charisma, but he does try to get shit over and he reacts to things.
Right.
But it's always, his is always like, oh my. Oh, yeah. At least he's reacting to it.
Well, my favorite Lawrence was when Jerry Lawler became the big stud of the promotion, and he was just like, we were still spewing Von Erich stuff at him. That's my favorite moment. But on that note,
loyal through and through.
What now?
I say Mark Lawrence is loyal through and through.
Exactly, baby.
Fuck this Jerry Lawler. He likes to fuck little girls, from what I understand.
That'll get him over his heel.
I just remember Jerry Lawler arguing with him, and he's like, you're no Von Erich, you know, and stuff. And I just loved it. Oh, man. This is a very interesting show. I mean, we got a lot of stuff going on. They're, you know, give us a good angle with the prolonging the Adams Garvin feud. They elevated Devastation Inc. and Missing Link as a potential player. Kerry, I mean, showed a lot of, you know, the game busted open, gave a lot to get Link over. You know, interesting stuff going ahead. What about you, Kelly? What do you think about the show overall?
Well, it all hinged on the main event being a great angle. And, well, yeah, and then the Adams Garvin stuff progressed their feud. But, yeah, it was all about the main event, and it was one of the better angles they've done in a while. That I can recall. So, yeah, I'm all in on this Link Von Erich feud.
What about you, John? What are your thoughts on the show, bro?
It's one of those shows where it's like Kelly said, it's all about the main event or the main event angle. Because without that, even with the Adams Garvin stuff, without that, this was bad. But that was so good, despite Bill Mercer. That was so good. That I'd give this a thumbs up because I totally enjoyed. That was great. I mean, Kerry's bloody. You know, the Link looks like a monster, that unbeatable monster. That's good shit. So thumbs up.
It shows you don't need to have like these classic work rate matches if you're having the good storytelling, which what that main event did, and you know, and you get a nice little angle, and it just it makes the show flew by. I felt, and I enjoyed it. So on that note, man, anything you want to plug there, John?
Once again, I'd like to plug Gideon Guys. We'll be recording episode 4 tomorrow. That's our me and Travis's new podcast where we go over the TV show, DC's The Legends of Tomorrow, and we're in season 1. We're having a lot of fun. That show's really coming together. We're coming up with different ideas and really finding a nice rhythm and really enjoying it. And people seem to be not getting a ton of feedback. I'm looking at the listener numbers, and people are listening to it, so people are enjoying it. So that's pretty awesome. And I also want to plug Travis. Kelly, I don't know if you were going to, but Travis also launched his own another new podcast called Yours, Mine, and the Truth. And his first episode dropped last night. I listened to it, and it's outstanding. He's going over various things that he loved through life, you know, as a young man, and then reexamining them now. And his first deep dive with a friend of his who's very much into metal is into the debut album of the band Extreme, who is Travis's favorite band, which is outstanding. And I'm not an Extreme fan, and I listened to the whole show, and it was outstanding. So everyone needs to listen. These are the two newest shows on the PWO Podcast Network.
Check it out, folks. Kelly, anything you'd like to plug?
Well, yeah, I'll continue with what Johnny was saying. PWO, maybe it should be PWM. What does the M stand for? No, I'm just kidding. It's still pro wrestling only, or it's in flux now. We have non wrestling shows. You have two, maybe there's more coming, but of course the majority is wrestling, and we have Strong Style History. We have Who's Next? I haven't mentioned this one yet. Stephen Graham's 20th attempt at a podcast. Maybe this one will stick. He's looking at Bill Goldberg's undefeated streak in WCW.
Throw enough shit at the wall. Hopefully something will stick.
He's up to the Wrath, or Wrath was the wrestler. So let's see how that goes.
Well, I have. Listen, Kelly. I know we kid Steven a lot, but I have faith in him this time because this is a show with a shelf life. Goldberg had so many in the streak, so he has a goal to shoot for, you know. So I'm with you in this one, Steven. I think you could do a bunch of 70-20-minute shows. I think you got it in you, buddy.
Oh yeah, I'm just busting Steven's balls. Actually, he's up to Disco Inferno. He put out 2 this week. I think we had 12 shows drop this week, which has got to be a record. And I'm doing International House of Combat with Steve Willey from The Place to Be Nation. There's Days of Thunder. There's Boom Goes the Dynamite.
Steve's one of the good guys out there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he loves to talk about you, Pete. You're one of his favorites. And, yeah, he's you guys are all part of that community. It's great stuff. Yeah, we're just pumping out shows like crazy. Yeah, so check it out, PWO. Pro wrestling only, whatever you want to call it. We've got a lot of great shows going.
No, we need to just do the same ad campaign that Vince did. We get to say that we're being sued by the Ocelote, like the wildlife fund. We just got to get the O out. PWE.
Yeah.
Get the O out.
Pro wrestling entertainment. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, there you go.
On that fucking note, everyone have a great week, and we will see you later. Bye-bye.
My heartaches and troubles are just up and gone. The moment that you come in view, with your hand in mine, dear, could dance on and on, and I could waltz across Texas with you. Waltz across Texas with you. Texas with you, like a storybook ending, I'm lost in your charms, and I could waltz across.